from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. Just 18% of California's eligible voters cast ballots in the June primary. And according to a report released this week by education leaders, less than half of California's high school seniors consider active involvement in state and local issues their responsibility. What can schools do to improve civic engagement? That's next on Forum after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, good morning. I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. After a year-long process, a panel of state education leaders unveiled this week its recommendations for revitalizing K-12 civic education. According to the panel's report, less than half of California's high school seniors feel that active involvement in state and local issues is their responsibility. And among high school seniors nationwide, just 13% showed a solid understanding of U.S. history when surveyed in 2012. We'll talk about the effort to revive civic engagement among students and why it matters in this opening hour of Forum. Joining us in studio is Joe Kahn, professor of education at Mills College. He's also research director of the Civic Engagement Research Group and was a member of the Civic Learning Task Force. Welcome, Joe Kahn.
Great to be here.
Also with us is Youngwon Choi, History and Civic Engagement Coordinator for Oakland Unified School District. He also taught history and English at MetWest High School in Oakland. Good morning to you, Youngwon Choi.
Good morning.
Robin Mencher is also here. She's Director of Education and Media Learning at KQED. Good morning, Robin.
Good morning.
And joining us by phone is David Gordon, Superintendent of the Sacramento County Office of Education. He co-chaired the Civic Learning Task Force. Good morning, David Gordon.
Good morning.
David Gordon, I'll start with you. Just to lay the groundwork here, define civic engagement.
Civic engagement means exposing our young people to the information that they need to be effective citizens, voters, participants in our democracy, and then giving them hands-on experiences while they're in school so they can practice those skills. You know, you're not granted on your 18th birthday magically competence in citizenship. You have to learn it, you have to practice it, and that's how we keep our democracy alive.
And the impetus for this plan, David Gordon, came not just from education, but also from the judiciary, right?
That's right, and that's a big difference from similar efforts in the past. The Chief Justice of California has made this a top priority for the courts because the courts were finding young people didn't know what the role of the courts were. And in fact, many didn't even know that the courts are in fact an independent branch of government. In fact, many of our leaders don't realize that. They think that the courts somehow report to the governor or the legislature. So the interest of the Chief Justice and the courts has been a tremendous asset because they're interested in having good jurors, as we all should be.
And in the report, Joe Kahn, that you and David Gordon helped put out, one of the things that's written there is that civic education needs to regain its priority status, which suggests that it sort of lost it in the first place. Why did that happen?
Well, I think historically, the civic mission of schools, or the idea that schooling was to prepare citizens, was at the core of what drove really the rationale for widespread public schooling in the country, if we go back all the way to Horace Mann or folks like Thomas Jefferson. And over time, and especially in the past few decades, with the increased emphasis on performance in the labor market, which is obviously also very important, there's been a heightened emphasis on literacy performance, on math and on science, in ways that may have made the focus on social studies and especially on civics less central. So it's not that any of those other things aren't important, but it has meant, for example, that where in the past students might have access to two or even three courses where they considered issues in the society, that's frequently been scaled back considerably.
And Young Won Choi, as a teacher and now as a coordinator of history and civic engagement for Oakland Unified, have you experienced this shift or seen this drop? And are you starting to see it gain more importance as you go along?
Sure. Definitely we've seen, I think, less prioritization of social studies education over the years. But I do think with this initiative and also just seeing some of the successes that we've been having through this work over the last couple of years in Oakland, that at least within Oakland Unified, it's beginning to gain much more significance and priority within the district.
And so what have been the challenges of trying to, you know, regain its significance at Oakland Unified?
Well, I think, you know, a lot of it is a culture shift, and there's also a lot of pressure on teachers and on administrators in schools to respond to the demands of testing. And I think that's another element that a lot of the research shows, is that as the increased pressure for performance on high-stakes tests has come down on teachers, there's been more and more focus in the classroom on test preparation and less on thinking about civic issues.
So then, David Gordon, what are we talking about in terms of real on-the-ground changes that we could see in schools if this curriculum is implemented?
Well, I think the landscape of education has changed now. We have the Common Core state standards now, and we have the local control funding formula. So a lot of the action has now moved not from mandates at the state level, but to the local level. And so our job is to convince local educators, local leaders, community leaders, business leaders, number one, that this is important, and number two, that it fits well with the Common Core in the sense that civic learning activities are very engaging to students. They lend themselves to going into depth on topics and issues, and allowing students to reach out into the community and have hands-on experiences. So I think it's a selling job to the local level and the local officials that this is important. Our democracy really depends on our doing this with our young people. And beside that, it's a good way to teach literacy and other kinds of skills, not just in the social studies classes.
So besides, say, field trips to the state capitol, David Gordon, what else could we see?
Well, let me give you an example of what they did down in Brawley, California, in the Imperial Valley, not an affluent area of the state. The teachers gave the students the city budget, and they asked them to work together and analyze the city budget and take it forth and talk to local officials about the city budget, raise questions about what the priorities were, and they appeared before the city council. City council members came to the schools, city officials came to the schools, and the students were completely engaged and doing something that not only did they learn about the city budget and how that was developed, but they got to meet the people who were involved in doing that.
It sounds fascinating and really engaging. So why is it such a tough selling job with teachers? Do you want to speak to that, Young Won Choi?
Well, actually, if I could also just make a point to build on something that Dave Gordon was saying, you know, I think his point about the engagement level that happens with students in the classroom when civics and civic education becomes a focus is really, really critical here, particularly in school districts like Oakland, urban school districts with huge dropout rates, that we really need to think about how our classroom instruction, how the priorities of a district and the priorities at the state and national level are supporting teachers to be able to do this type of education in the classrooms. Because when we do this, and we've seen this repeatedly in the classrooms where we're working with teachers, engagement levels increase, students are more interested in what they're learning, and it's a more powerful way for them to build academically rigorous skills, because students want to think well, they want to write well, they want to be able to speak well when they know that it really matters. If it's just another assignment to turn into a teacher, they realize the stakes are not real. But when you're, presenting in front of a school board or you're talking to your local official, it raises the level of expectation of what students are supposed to do. And I think that high level of expectation is what causes or what supports students to rise to those expectations.
So then what kinds of support, what supports do teachers need then to be able to do what you're saying, to feel engaged and not feel like it's just another thing that you're adding to the requirements of a teacher's day?
Right. I think that's a great point. And one thing that I often say to our teachers is there's no manual, there's no civic engagement textbook. And so a lot of what we're having to figure out is on the ground with teachers learning about this through their own practices. And in order to do that well, I think teacher collaboration is absolutely essential, that teachers need the space. It needs to be built into the school day for them to come together and collaborate and think about what are they doing in their classrooms? What is someone else next door to them doing so that they can learn from each other and see what best practices are emerging as teachers try to innovate in these, I think, more engaging ways for students.
And Robin Mencher, you've also had some experience of trying to engage teachers in the curriculum and in sort of learning programs as well that KQED is putting out. What have been some of the things you've learned in terms of why there might, what you might need to do to help meet the needs of teachers and encourage them to engage in what you're presenting?
Absolutely. Teachers turn to KQED and public media sources to bring real-world examples into the classroom to make learning relevant. And we know that it's sometimes hard when we're talking about timely issues and news stories to bring something that we create here as news reporting and into the classroom directly. So what our education team does is actually help build the tools to translate that work to connect directly back to Common Core state standards, skill building, and then also the history and social science standards to make those links really relevant from what's happening today to how it fits into history. And we do that in a couple of ways. We have our news education project publishes The Lowdown, which explains and makes those direct links on timely news topics like immigration reform, controversial issues like gun control, climate change, income inequality, and then links them back to major historical events that are already part of the classroom curriculum.
So, David Gordon, it sounds like there's a lot of active things already to try to encourage civic learning in the classroom. Does this plan include resources for better teacher training on this?
Well, again, as I mentioned earlier, the old days of a centralized mandate from Sacramento are behind us. This local control funding model really vests these funding decisions at the local level with our local school boards and local school officials. So we are really trying to get a grassroots campaign going to bring this issue before local school boards. We had the president of the School Board Association on our task force. So we'll be working to try to develop advocacy at the local level to get local school districts and their constituent organizations, the business community, the political community, to embrace this and get these things going at the local level. It's not that expensive to do if you weave it into the new Common Core curriculum and some of the existing courses. It's more a question of making it a priority and focusing on it.
So you're essentially saying that districts will decide, depending on their resources and their abilities, of whether or not they'll be able to do this. It'll go district by district.
Right. And the question of how important is this to our democracy? And, we're in a situation now where less than half the eligible young people, 18 to 24, voted in 2012. That number has been going down. More of our population can name the judges on American Idol than on the U.S. Supreme Court. So this is a big time problem for our society, and unless we can turn it around, we're going to have trouble protecting our freedom and our democracy.
We're talking about efforts to revitalize civic education in K-12 schools with our guests David Gordon, superintendent of Sacramento County Office of Education, Joe Kahn, professor of education at Mills College, Youngwon Choi, history and civic engagement coordinator for Oakland Unified School District, and Robin Mencher, KQED's director of education and media learning. And Joe Kahn, so you looked at this equity question then in terms of ensuring that
if these recommendations are rolled out, they're rolled out in an equitable way. And given the fact that it's going to depend a lot on district by district, resources from potentially private sources as well as public sources, how are you getting at that question of equity?
Well, I think that's a crucial question for us in California as well as, of course, throughout the country. And some of our thinking on this is informed by a study that Ellen Middaugh and I did a few years ago, where we surveyed students in 19 different districts all over the state of California around the civic learning opportunities that young people receive. And the clear finding from that study is that while there are not as many civic learning opportunities in general for young people as we would like, what was really striking was how inequitable they were. And so we found that students from higher socioeconomic status communities, basically students whose families had higher incomes, were getting frequently twice the number of civic learning opportunities as those at the median or in the middle, and even sometimes four times as many learning opportunities as those who were low income.
And for example, civic learning
opportunities. So, for example, we have a lot of research that shows things like community service opportunities that are tied to the curriculum, engagement in simulations of courts or of the Model UN and things like that, opportunities to discuss current events and debate current issues. All of those kinds of things have been shown to promote higher levels of civic engagement as well as more thoughtful civic engagement. And yet what we're finding is that some kids are getting far more of those opportunities than others. So one of the big things, given that we have to think about on the task force and as a state, is what are the things we can do to promote it? So one of the things is connected to our recommendations regarding assessment and accountability, that it is important to assess outcomes, how much do students know, how engaged are they, but it's also important to assess how many learning opportunities are they getting so that schools have feedback and have data about which to then plan and say, oh, we're low on this area, we could respond to it. Without that kind of data around learning opportunities, focusing only on the outcomes, you really don't have as much leverage or ability to focus on what will really matter. So we believe we can assess both of those things and really position schools much more strongly to improve.
When you say assessments, though, it sounds like more tests, and that's always controversial with teachers
and
educators.
Yeah, we actually shy away from the standard or the common model of high-stakes testing. We don't think that what California kids need right now is more required tests. We do think that it's possible to do some matrix tests or to build into matrix tests. And what matrix is a little bit technical, but basically it allows you to sample a small number of students from across the state, which can give you a very accurate, sort of like the census or a poll, can give you a very accurate sense of what's happening in the state without subjecting millions of children to spending hours taking tests. And so that's one way to deal with it. Another is to do what we might call low-stakes surveys and tests that will give us information but are not the kinds of things that will drive teachers to do test prep. Rather, they're the kinds of things that can give them indicators that can help them reflect on what they're doing.
Do you think that's something that teachers will embrace, Young Won Choi?
Yeah, I was just hoping you'd ask me because I was – thinking just about how much demand I've been seeing from teachers for this type of professional learning. And in fact, on Monday, we have a 3-day professional learning series and we're at capacity. We have more teachers who want to participate than we have space for. And this is 2 weeks before the school year officially starts and teachers are officially still on summer vacation. And they're knocking down the door to try to get these types of opportunities to engage students. Because if you ask teachers, most of the teachers you speak to in Oakland will say that this is a priority for them, but that they don't have the space to figure out how to do this in the classroom. It's not a priority at the school at their school district or at the state level, and that's part of the challenge with making this possible.
But do you think the assessments piece of it will be a potential turnoff or something that you're going to have to make sure is very clear as part of that process?
Definitely. I think I also shy away from civic engagement as yet another subject to be tested in a high-stakes setting. But I do think the data from assessment, if it's being used to inform classroom instruction as well as to inform, as Professor Kamp was talking about the opportunities students are being given, I think that's a critical set of data that schools could use to then think about what do we need to do to support students to have these opportunities in the classroom.
And Joe Kahn, in terms of equity, we talked about it in terms of applying, allowing that education to be applied as broadly as possible. But we're also dealing with a very different or changing and dynamic student population. And I was wondering how that piece of things, how we have a student population that's more than half Latino, you know, about 26% white, 10% Asian, and so on, 6% African American. I wonder how that sort of fit into the equation of coming up with what constitutes civic engagement and what kind of civic engagement really speaks to student population needs.
Yeah, well, so this is one of the, I think, the real strengths of this focus. In at least two ways. So one thing that is true in certain contexts is that some of the kids you were just talking about in California often come to school with fewer of the kinds of supports or prior experiences that allow them to be successful in many of the mainstream educational priority settings. And one of the nice things about focusing on civic education is actually in some important ways that flips the equation, because many kids from communities in Oakland, for example, have actually a far richer understanding of some of the issues in their community that they want to address. They have a sense of what some of the problems are. They have lived experience that gives them an understanding of some key dynamics, and they have a passion and interest for making their communities better. So in some important ways, what we're seeing in Oakland, but also in other places, is that it positions those kids with certain kinds of advantages, and they become experts in speaking about a lot of this. And so that gives them, and I think recognizing that knowledge and that expertise is another way to pursue equity. So we do think that's important.
And can you give an example of that? Of a student sort of driving
I can share some examples, for example, from focus groups that we did around the state. And in some of the suburban districts where we did these focus groups and we said, can you talk about an issue in your community that really needs attention? And you would be met with silence. And then people would say, well, you know, there's some stuff like the malls. They don't, you know, sometimes they don't let us hang out during the day. But really, for many of these kids, they didn't have community issues that they were focused on addressing. And some of them, even as you know, in some of these suburban communities, don't even think of themselves as being in some central community. They're sort of sprawled out suburban communities, which is totally fine. But in contrast, when we'd have those conversations with young people from urban areas, the second we asked, we had 10 things that needed to be thought about. We need to think about the police. We need to think about sanitation. We need to think about how do we get what we need in the schools so that they work well. We need to think, you know, so they could list a whole bunch of stuff, and they'd been thinking about it for a while. And so all of a sudden you start recognizing that there's a great deal of knowledge and passion in these kids. You know, we were talking about the relatively low numbers of young people who vote. And if we're going to want to get more kids to vote, a big piece of that is connecting what they care about and what's shaping their lives to what's being talked about. And I think this provides a way to do that.
We'll continue our conversation about revitalizing civics education in K-12 schools. Have you noticed a frightening lack of understanding of how government works among students or peers? Does civic engagement matter to you? If you'd like to join the discussion, give us a call at 866-733-6786. That's 866-733-6786. You can also email your questions or comments to forum@kqed.org or post them on our website, kqed.org/forum. I'm Mina Kim in today for Michael Krasny. Stay with us. Welcome back to Forum. I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. We're discussing recommendations out this week for revitalizing civic education in California's K-12 schools with David Gordon, superintendent of Sacramento County Office of Education, Joe Kahn, professor of education at Mills College, Young-Wan Choi, history and civic engagement coordinator for Oakland Unified School District, and Robin Mencher, KQED's director of education and media learning. And Young-Wan Choi, just before we went into break, you were also wanting to speak to this question of students really driving the civic education curriculum.
Yeah, so I'd love to give an example of two teachers at Castlemont High School in East Oakland, which is one of the communities that's most troubled with violence in Oakland, but it also has a ton of assets. And the teachers asked the students to go out and look at their community and to map their community for assets and also for areas of challenge. And they took that data and they created presentations that they then brought to the then Assistant City Administrator Fred Blackwell for Oakland's City Administrator's office. And they had a hearing where they presented their findings through this community mapping experience. And I think that's a perfect kind of example of students using something that they were really passionate about and turning that into an area of expertise that they could then present to an audience, a public official, to feel a sense of empowerment, to feel a sense of self-efficacy for the issues that they faced on a daily basis. And at the time that this happened, the students actually had lost a classmate at Castlemont High School, senior, who was tragically shot. And I think in the light of that shooting, to have these students then take what were issues that were facing them in the community and the suffering that they were experiencing, and actually figuring out a way to transform that suffering into some kind of positive action was a critically different way of approaching education and also really connecting school to the lives of students in a way that I think too often we don't see those opportunities when we don't have a civic engagement lens on when we're thinking about the priorities for education.
And Robin Mincher, you were also talking about trying to take these kinds of really intense student experiences and trying to translate them in KQED's Do Now project. Is that right?
Right. So Do Now is our project that allows students on a weekly basis to engage with current topics and issues, connect them back to their own lives, and begin to build the skills of civic discourse and participation in civic conversation. And the way that works is each week we put together a prompt and we add in some KQED media or media from our partner on the project, PBS NewsHour. We throw out a question around a big civic timely issue, and then we have students with their teachers respond thoughtfully to that. And they can do that in the classroom. They can comment on the KQED website, and they can also use Twitter as the space for civic dialogue. This is particularly germane to the task force report that really emphasizes bringing technologies as learning tools in the classroom for increasing civic participation. This also helps young people strengthen how they represent themselves publicly and allows them to authentically add their own voices to a much broader audience beyond their teacher and their classroom. Currently, we're working with teachers throughout the Bay Area and across the country to help teachers implement Do Now in the classroom. So it can be not taking over, adding on to the curriculum, but something really quick, and can also, if they want to go deeper, and we do that through our partnership with the National Writing Project, to connect back to evidence and argumentation and research skills that are all central to Common Core state standards.
And Joe Kahn, this digital piece of it was really your focus area, wasn't it, as a member of the task force?
This is one of the things I do, yeah, I've been able to do a lot of work on. And I think one of the things that I think we're all well aware of is that the practice of politics have changed. And the role of these new media in the way young people, as well as all of us, actually engage, express our opinions, debate issues, learn about issues, is now far more likely to have a digital component. So it's crucial for us, therefore, to prepare young people for that world. Now, it's true that many kids don't need our help figuring out how Twitter works. But if we want kids, for example, to be able to judge the credibility of the information that's out there online, they do need opportunities. And one of the things we found in our national survey is that a very small percentage of young kids young people are getting those opportunities currently. So we have about 14% of students reporting that they've had more than one or two opportunities to learn about how to judge the credibility of online information. If we're going to be ready for political life in the 21st century, we've got to strengthen ourselves along those lines.
Wendy writes, we need more than an ad hoc approach to civic education. It's too important. We should have a standard curriculum with room for teacher creativity and issues discussion. We need better resources, teacher training, possibly newspapers in every school, and time to read them. I mean, David Gordon, you know, this is what you were trying to address with the standard recommendations of the Civic Learning Task Force.
Yes, absolutely. We have underway a revision to the history social science framework, which will beef up the emphasis on civics. That framework, by the way, hasn't been revised in 15 years. If you looked at it, you wouldn't know that 9/11 occurred. So that's a big step forward.
Besides 9/11, what might be some other significant changes to the history curriculum?
Well, the history social science framework will be updated to incorporate within it an emphasis on civics and the proven practices that we know work in terms of delivering civics education. And many of those are the hands-on elements, not just memorizing factoids and regurgitating them on tests, but really getting hands-on, as has been talked about on the broadcast here, and giving kids an emotional sense that their participation is, number one, important, and number two, will make a real difference.
And you're hoping that these changes will be implemented in 2 years, am I right?
Well,
Or that the program will start rolling out in 2 years.
Well, I think this is going to be a work in progress, but I think it will depend on our making the case at the local level and energizing teams of advocates and people at the local level to say, this is too important for us not to do. We can't afford not to do this and not to invest in high-quality civic education, because we can't go forward as a state and as a nation if the only people that vote are our senior citizens. We have to get all of our population engaged in making the decisions that preserve our democracy, and right now we're not doing that. And the equity issue that Joe Kahn talked about is front and center in all of these recommendations. We can't make this simply the province of advantaged middle-class schools. We have to drive it into all of our schools in California.
And let's hear what our listeners have to say. Let's go to Ike in San Jose. Hi, Ike.
Hi. Great program. Thanks for the opportunity. I'm a civics teacher here in San Jose, and this is perfect because school is starting for us next week. But I offer my kids a chance to work as polling officers for the Santa Clara County Registrar of Voters. And what's great about it is they participate on that the day of the election, but they actually see what's going on, what voting is all about, and they get paid for it. And unfortunately, you know, I wish I could say that my students are altruistic and they do it out of the love of civics, but being paid to do something, they actually are there and they get to see what's going on.
So it includes that little extra incentive there.
Exactly. Well, they get paid by Black Friday, so they get to spend their money on Christmas gifts as well. So, you know, that's my suggestion.
Ike, thanks. And let's go to Linda in Sacramento. Hi, Linda.
Good morning. My name is Linda Reed. I run the Civitas program, which is actually in Dave's district. He's my county supervisor. We have been around for about 20 years doing civic education. It has evolved a lot over the 20 years. There were certain things that we thought students needed in the beginning, and they don't anymore. And we've included things from state and local government classes, political science, which focuses on the national issues, all the way up to the international now, because we realize how important that is to students. I agree with a lot of the things that people on the panel have said. I'm really excited to see this push for civics education as a civic educator for the last 20 years. A couple of the things that I think that are really important that I've seen with my students is that I'm lucky enough to do these specialized classes, but community service is not exactly the only thing that students should be doing. They should be definitely doing what we call service learning, which is tied to the curriculum that they're learning in those classes, so that they're taking the things from those textbooks and actually putting them into practice. And I also noticed that when we started to include project-based learning into our curriculum for the four-year ad academy that I'm teaching at, that students who did senior projects and junior internships were a lot more involved in their communities. They got it. They understood what government was doing and their role and their part in it. And I think that was really important. And I think the thing that a lot of teachers don't realize is it may take some work in the beginning to get some of these ideas and these programs in place in their curriculum. But once they pull back from only teaching from the textbook and teaching to the test, they're going to enjoy their classes a whole lot more. I know that's, for me, one of the reasons that I've done it for such a long time is because I enjoy seeing the students progress and the enthusiasm they have over this kind of teaching and their learning, because it's definitely student-centered.
Linda, thanks so much. I wonder, David Gordon, what were some model programs that you looked at to help, you know, define your recommendations, come up with your recommendations?
Good question. There were many model programs that we looked at. Civitas in Sacramento County was one of them. There is a range of high school programs in Los Angeles County, generously funded by the Bechtel Foundation, which are implementing various of the six proven practices. The Brawley program in Imperial County, and many others. We have an awards program for exemplary programs, and to her great credit, the Chief Justice of California, Tani Cantel Sakaue, goes personally to each of those schools to present the awards.
Amy writes, thank you for bringing this topic. It's very close to me. I'm the director of service learning at a private high school. I really agree with the guest about the inequality to access to civic engagement opportunities. Our school has an excellent program, and I love my job, yet I also value public education and would love to bring this passion and experience I have to public schools. I have tried many times to get a job in a public school, but always found that this was not valued when I would stress this as part of my own pedagogy. What advice do the guests have about seeking job opportunities? In terms of, do you think, David Gordon, that her difficulty finding folks who are engaged in this civic engagement aspect or value this is because it's something that most districts aren't valuing enough?
I don't know. It's hard to judge an individual situation, but if she would like to send me her resume, I'd be happy to take a look at it.
Well, you heard that, Amy. And Daniel writes, hi, I wondered if the panel was aware of the work of the Junior Statesman Foundation, also known as JSA. This 80-year-old organization is devoted to civic education through clubs and summer programs throughout the United States. Is that a program that was looked at?
Yes, indeed it was. And I should have mentioned that in addition to the task force itself, we had an advisory group which was comprised of many of the organizations that have been doing civic education, including the California leader of the Junior Statesman Foundation, sat in all of our meetings.
And let's go to more of your calls. Let's go to Philip in San Francisco. Hi, Philip.
Good morning. I want to commend your guests on their work towards increased civic education. I'm 69 years old, and I've taught English as a second language for 35 years, but recently I've taught two Chinese ladies the citizenship part of the gaining citizenship, how to pass the interview. And so I want to suggest to your guests that they look at those 100 questions that are available. One of the questions is, what is one of the responsibilities of a U.S. citizen? And that is to vote. And another one is, what is one of the responsibilities? And that is to vote. And another question is, how can you participate in democracy? By voting, writing to newspapers, belonging to organizations. So I want to suggest to your guests that they review those questions with their students, but also maybe train students to help immigrants pass the interview. It's a very long process. It takes lots of individual time and maturity, but it might be a way that some of the students could not only participate in democracy, but allow another person to participate on democracy by passing the interview for citizenship.
Philip, thanks. I see Young Won Choi nodding.
I just think it's a fabulous idea of turning students into experts and having them be in a leadership role, and also to do something that's really beneficial to the health of democracy.
And in immigrant families, it's often the kids and the students who play a powerful role in enabling their parents to get citizenship or become more engaged in politics.
Yes, totally. I agree with that.
And let's go to more of your calls. Let's go to Anon in San Mateo. Am I saying your name correctly?
Hi, it's Anon.
Anon, great.
Anon.
Go ahead, please.
Thanks for taking the call. I am a community organizer just by happenstance, and one of the things that we spend a lot of time doing especially during the election season, is education of the issues and of the role that this particular position or elected official is going to be fulfilling. And right now I'm working on some school board races, and we're taking a lot of extra time to develop that connection. But a lot of people just seem very disconnected for that. You know, we have, like one of your guests said, a lot of older people that understand it, that vote all the time. And those are the people that we're talking to. But if we are trying to get young people to be engaged, they have to understand what these roles, what these positions, and what these people of power do, and how it affects them on a daily basis. So creating that connection at an early age is helpful, but sustaining that connection throughout their life, not only through voting, but having meaningful interactions with these positions of power, I think, are going to be much more effective for keeping people engaged. And so I just kind of want to see if any of the panelists have ideas of how to create that, or if that's a goal in mind for continuing to increase civic engagement in the school realm.
And thank you. Joe Kahn?
Well, I think one of the keys to keeping students engaged and building their interests, and I think we've spoken about this in a bunch of ways, is really connecting to students where they are and with the issues that they care about and with the ways of engaging society that have meaning for them. And so one of the opportunities that I think is a big one for us right now is to tap into the ways in which young people use social media. And in fact, if one takes a look at engagement overall politically, young people are well ahead of adults when it comes to using social media to engage politically. So even though it's true, seniors are much more involved in many of the what we think of as traditional forms of political engagement. When it comes to things like sharing news stories through, say, Facebook or Twitter or any other social media platform, or when it comes to mobilizing people online, young people are actually doing it far more frequently than older adults. So I think there are a lot of ways in which schools, and as well as, I should say, youth organizations, because a lot of great work on this happens in community organizations, not just in schools, and part of what we have to do is build stronger bridges between schools and those organizations. But there's a lot of ways to really leverage that interest so that kids' devotion to their, iPhone can be mobilized in ways that help them engage politically. And I think a lot of the teachers that we're working with in Oakland and elsewhere, and I think the Do Now KQED's work does this as well, really leverages that knowledge and that interest.
We're finding that that to be exactly true. And what we know is that young people walk into the classroom or into their out-of-school time activities with a very powerful tool in their pocket, and that's their mobile device. And they may be very tech-savvy, but that's pretty different than being digitally literate. So even teachers who might be reticent to embrace social media and new technologies as learning tools in the classroom, there's a partnership that can go on between the expertise of research and building arguments and civic participation that teachers have with the tech savviness that so many young people have to really build those digital literacy and civic participation skills. And that's what we do with KQED's Do Now project.
Thanks, Robin. Robert writes, my ever-dimming recollection is still pretty sharp about how well a robust, selective service focused one's mind on the intricacies of government and on national and international affairs. Jackie writes, it's so important to revive the civic mission of education. I work at the Alameda County Office of Education, where we have several strong civic education programs. One of my colleagues, Nate Ivey, who directs the Stop Waste program, put it so well. The world has huge problems that we need to solve. Young people have energy and ideas for solutions. Let's put them together. Thanks to everyone on today's panel for the work you do. And Dave Gordon, that's really the point, right, is that there are a lot of really great things happening in individual little communities, or maybe, as you were saying, in sort of higher income districts as well. But the what you're really trying to do is make it something that's available to everyone across the state.
Exactly. And in the in our report on page 45 through 47.
Which is available online, I guess, if folks want to peruse that section.
Yeah, it is. It's available at www.powerofdemocracy.org. And there's a listing of things that every imaginable group can do, from PTAs to business leaders. And that's exactly right. We want to build this groundswell of support and really a sense of obligation that we have to reach out and get into our schools and help the teachers and help the students become engaged and become involved. And I think we can do it. It will be a tremendous addition to our educational program and make our democracy an awful lot stronger.
Dave Gordon, I guess if we continue on the same path that we're on now, that you're seeing as being so troubling in terms of people's civic engagement, you know, what kind of future do you think we face?
Well, I think we're kind of reaping what we've sown in many ways, where parts of government are almost completely dysfunctional and the process is not working to solve the problems of the nation. Look at what's going on with these children migrating to our shores, and no one can reach agreement on how to work with this problem and deal with the problem. That doesn't bode well for us in the future. And you know, the Constitution that we have, we solve problems peacefully. We don't solve them in the streets and through violence, but I think we're taking that too much for granted.
And Yongwan Choi, in terms of where we are headed, also I think in terms of who represents us in terms of leadership is a big part of this. Besides the fact that they can't seem to get along, it's also what will they look like and will they reflect the student populations that we have?
Right. I think that's an excellent point. You know, I think that it's hard to represent someone's interests if you don't have a lived experience of those interests. And the fact that so many people from disadvantaged communities are essentially blocked from access to positions of political power in our society makes it very difficult for those interests to be heard and for decisions to be made with an understanding of the lived experience of those communities. And so I think one way that we can begin to address this, and this is not the full solution, but certainly by improving civic engagement opportunities for students in schools, we're giving them those opportunities to develop those leadership capacities and abilities, and also to push on the political structures to allow more space for those types of voices and opinions to exist.
Diana from San Mateo writes, at 22, I never had a political science class until college, and the reasons behind this apathy among young people can be summed up in my classmates' question, what's the point? When we see the frivolousness of Congress our entire lives, how are we supposed to have faith in a system that, according to a lot of my classmates, seems less mature than we are? If young people want to feel involved in politics, they have to be taught and experienced that something can be done, no matter how small. This is the only way to improve civil engagement. And let's go to another call, Dan in San Francisco. Hi, Dan.
Hi, how are you?
I'm great, thanks.
This is a little bit of a challenge question for your panel there. We seem to be having a DEF conversation, and we haven't covered ABC. About 99% of the people of America don't know what the word citizen means. So, you know, in Rome, if you weren't voting. You weren't a citizen. You were put outside the wall. There are consequences to not being a citizen. So I think that we need to have everybody on the panel tell us, what does the word mean?
Thanks, Dan. And actually, that dovetails. We just have a little bit of time left with quickly, you know, how do you define citizenship, and a recommendation for how we can do our part, our civic duty. And I'll start with you, Robin.
Well, our cultural landscape has really shifted, and now everyone has the power to add their voice in a public way. And so citizenship really has to include engaging in civic discourse.
Jokon.
So one of the things that's been very exciting that's been happening in Oakland has been a movement from focusing on preparing all kids to be college and career ready to having all kids be college, career, and community ready. And I think that what the teachers and the leaders in Oakland, as well as the kids, are focusing on is trying to articulate, what does it really mean to be community ready? And I think as we collectively decide what that is, we're really educating for citizenship.
Youngwon Choi.
I guess my final 2 cents here would be to even question the framing around citizenship, and that for so many of our young students who are undocumented, that it already alienates them from the conversation. And so one of the ways that we do define and think about this work in Oakland is to talk about community ready. And so we're talking about community membership, participation, and making your community better, because everybody, regardless of what your status is in this country, should feel a civic duty to making their communities better.
Thanks, Youngwon. And David Gordon, just seconds left.
I think every citizen has the obligation to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, but you cannot defend what you do not understand. And Justice Anthony Kennedy said, the nature of democracy is that we are trustees of freedom for the next generation. It's not an option to do that. We must do it, or we're going to lose what we have.
And we were joined this hour by David Gordon, superintendent of the Sacramento County Office of Education. Thank you. Joseph Kahn, professor of education at Mills College. Youngwon Choi, history and civic engagement coordinator for Oakland Unified School District. He was also a history teacher at MetWest High School in Oakland. And Robin Mencher, director of education and media learning here at KQED. Thank you all for being here today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Mina Kim, in today for Michael Krasny. Up next, we have Chris Bowers, a jazz pianist. Thanks so much for listening, and stay with us.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio, the Germanicos Foundation, and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schremm and Maria Minetti Schremm, founders of Clos Pegase Winery, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.